And welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Monique Andrews, a licensed therapist and a professor of psychology at Alaska Pacific University. As September marks National Suicide Prevention Month, our program today is focusing on a critical but often overlooked public health issue: the mental health of our aging population. When we talk about suicide prevention, the conversation frequently centers on younger demographics, but the reality is that older adults are profoundly vulnerable. For older adults in general, risk factors such as social isolation, chronic pain, and the loss of a spouse create a perfect storm for severe depression. But when you add the element of possible cognitive decline, the early stages of dementia or Alzheimer's, those risk factors multiply. The profound fear, the loss of autonomy, and the anxiety of a changing mind can be overwhelming for both the individual and their family. But this is not just a conversation about risk. It is also a conversation about hope and resilience. Today, we're going to pivot toward the protective factors of aging well. How do community connection, purpose, and early intervention create a safety net for our seniors? And most importantly, what resources are available right here in our state to support families walking this path? To help us explore this very timely topic, we have two wonderful guests. Joining us today is Dr. Steffi Kim, a professor and researcher at University of Alaska, Anchorage. Her work focuses deeply on successful aging and a positive strength-based approach to aging and dementia. We are also joined by Yasmin Radbod, program coordinator for the Alaska Commission on Aging. They are both here to talk to us about the complexities of navigating aging and memory, but also to offer hope and resources to Alaskans. Thank you both for being here today to share about aging and aging well. Let's start with Dr. Kim. Can you share a little bit about yourself and your area of focus in your research?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for having us, Monique. This is a wonderful opportunity to share what we have learned from elders so far across the state. And so just to introduce myself, I was born and raised in East Germany, and that was under the communist regime. And while that generally isn't, you know, had some challenging experiences involved. However, one element that I took or kind of informed me over the years was spending some time with older adults in the community. And it was usually provided through some community engagement or school activities that we would visit our older adults and go shopping for them, ask them if they need some fresh coals in their house to heat their homes, or just kind of spend some time. And I very early on recognized that I just love spending time with them, that I loved hanging out in their home, sharing or hearing their stories, you know, supporting them in any way I could. And that really stayed with me over time. And so when I started the clinical community psychology program at UAA in 2015, a couple of years later, Dr. Jordan Lewis approached us and was asking about someone who would be interested in working with older adults. And I was like, oh my God, here it is. Here's my opportunity to actually do what I always liked doing, but never really figured it would maybe fit into a profession. And so he's an Alaska Native researcher from the village of Naknek, and he invited me or took me into his research agenda that's been now 20 years of looking into successful aging, but also generativity. And through those years of working with him, I was able to go and visit all different kinds of communities, sit with elders, hear their stories, and learn from them what it means to age well. And I will talk more about that a little bit later.
Thank you. And Yasmin, could you introduce yourself and share an overview of your role with Alaska's Commission on Aging?
Thanks so much, Monique. I am our program coordinator at the Commission on Aging. We are an executive board, so predominantly appointed public member seats by the governor, and then we have some statutorily required seats, including Pioneer Homes seat from the Pioneer Homes Board, a Department of Health seat, et cetera. We are an office of only two staff, so I am based in Anchorage. I cover most of the state, our outreach, I do data work, policy analysis, and our director, Marty, is based in Juneau. And then we have 11 commissioners that make up our board. Our mission is to ensure the dignity and independence of all older Alaskans, which is a tall order, but we, you know, do our absolute best. And with a growing baby boomer population, and especially our 80 plus population on the rise in the coming years, we're dedicated to fulfilling our mission as best as we can. A little bit about me. My maternal grandfather worked on the Alcan in World War II. He was in the Army Corps of Engineers, and he loved Alaska. So I moved up here, maybe it's been around 4 or so years now, after my grandmother passed, my maternal grandmother, who I was very close with, and I was dreaming about the tundra, and it just... it worked out. And so I moved up here to work with Rural Cap's Elder Mentor Program. I did an AmeriCorps year of VISTA, and then moved into this position with the commission.
All right. What drew you to work specifically with the Alaska Commission on Aging? And most importantly, what is your favorite part about supporting seniors in our state?
Absolutely. You know, I think overall, like as a nation, we're not really comfortable as a society addressing our mortality, right? It's difficult to face that as an individual on our own, and then to have conversations with our loved ones, right? Our parents, and navigate that journey of, you know, what do you want? Like going through your advanced care directive, right? Making sure your will has an executor. That's a very difficult process to face. That being said, you know, I experience everyday situations, right, where we really need to encourage as much planning and having those difficult conversations early, because if we just approach it in a crisis, unfortunately, you know, you can imagine, right? We kind of all have within our networks, we've all heard of situations that have been so difficult.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was working with the Elder Mentor Program at Rural Cap originally, and had an opportunity. There was an opening with the commission, and started out as our rural outreach coordinator, and now our program coordinator.
Thank you so much. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the suicide rate for Americans 65 plus are some of the highest suicide rates across demographics. And between 2019 and 2023, adults 85 and older consistently had the highest rates for deaths by suicide. We often hear about the risk factors associated with these numbers, but to pivot toward hope, what are some positive protective factors that help older adults maintain their mental health as they age? Dr. Kim?
Okay. Yeah, so in general, I think one of the major points there is social connection. That's specifically lately coming out, and it's quite pronounced in a way that we are kind of socially disconnected more and more, and especially for older adults, that's true. And that's partly, I think part of it is that we don't have these multi-generational homes anymore. We kind of have a focus on independent living, or just not, as a society, providing those opportunities to be socially engaged and be mobile around towns. So that some places do a better job with that than others. But once we get to a place where we maybe have a hard time driving a car, that looks very difficult. We need to rely on someone else. We, you know, if you're lucky enough, you have a bus around that would take you somewhere. But then it really takes an effort. And so in some places, especially urban places, it can be quite lonely to and take a lot of effort to connect. And while there are opportunities, I think on the other hand, one of the other components, and Yasmin kind of pointed to that, is kind of our Western way of thinking about what aging means and what that entails. So there's a lot of, like, there are campaigns about anti-aging campaigns or anti-ageism campaigns that talk about these challenges. So generally, like, when I provide a presentation and I ask, you know, how many of you are looking forward to being 80 years old? Mm-hmm. Usually it's one hand, maybe two, and nobody else. And those, usually those folks share that they have very good relationships with their grandparents or other older adults in their community. But others are just kind of in denial that this is going to happen to them. And so I think as a society, at least from a Western perspective, we have a lot of room to grow into seeing this maybe differently. And that's kind of where my part of my research comes in as well. And I'll talk about that later.
Thank you. Yasmin, would you like to add anything?
Thank you. You know, as we age, Steffi is absolutely right about having strong social connections. I'm going to reference Chris Green, who is an Anchorage local and is an amazing advocate. She works with seniors. She has a group at our local senior center on grief and counseling. You know, these risk factors as we age, you know, grief, we can feel grief for a number of reasons, because a loved one has passed, also because my vision is suddenly poor, right? Mm-hmm. Or I just received a new diagnosis and am shell-shocked. Little things, right? My mobility is decreasing over time. The people that I grew up with are fewer, right, as I age. So there's all of these factors that when you combine them can create quite a large a risk. And, you know, one of our, like, in our annual report, we had some governor recommendations this year. You know, there are systemic things that we can do to encourage, you know, tighter protective factors across communities. This month, September, is not only, you know, Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. It's also, later this month, will be Remembrance Day for boarding schools. Mm-hmm. And in our governor recommendations this year, we requested, you know, there's an option, for example, right, this is just one thing, but Center for Medicare, Medicaid Services, CMS, there's an option for states now to cover traditional healing practices with Medicaid, which would be huge for Alaska. Mm. We have the highest number of federally recognized tribes, right? And there are a number of other states that have successfully applied for this and now are offering that as a part of their Medicaid services. Yeah, so I think you know what I'm getting at, right? Having strong traditional healing practices, being tied to our culture, intergenerational connections. Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Yes. And speaking of protective factors, I see that the commission is hosting a statewide summit on aging this October in Anchorage. This is a first of its kind summit. What should Alaskans expect to learn from the summit?
Thanks so much for that question. We are so thrilled to be working on this with so many nonprofit partners and organizations around the state. Special Olympics traditionally has hosted the Aging Disability Summit at their beautiful facility and gymnasium in Mountain View, Anchorage. And this year, you know, they approached us. They want it to be bigger, right, to have more of an impact. And so we're working closely on what was a smaller event is now 3 full days of nearly 40 sessions and over 100 speakers with all regions of Alaska represented. And we're very proud of that. So we have a focus on rural innovation. And, you know, what's amazing about Alaska is that every different community, every region has their own approach. And we have that ability here where, you know, tribal health organizations can figure out unique solutions. And our goal with this summit is to give them the platform to share what innovations they're doing in their community that is solving aging and disability concerns so that other communities can learn about them and adapt those. So it's going to be just an amazing sharing of information.
It sounds like it's going to be a really welcoming summit. Thank you. You are listening to Line One, your health connection. Yasmin, how can people sign up or attend the summit that you were referring to, the statewide summit on aging?
Sure. So we're proud to offer waived registration costs for Alaskans ages 65 and older and Alaskans with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We are offering breakfast and lunch every day at the summit. So we do still require registration so we can track, you know, numbers. I don't think we're going to do walk-ins at this time because we expect a volume of folks already. And I'll share this again, but my number is 907-230-0871. If there is anyone that's trying to register and is having any issues at the registration link, you can just visit alaskasilk.org, alaskasilc.org, or Google Alaska Statewide Summit on Aging. Feel free to reach out. My contact info should be all over the place. Definitely happy to get folks registered. And there is a cost otherwise.
Okay, thank you. Turning to Dr. Kim, your research emphasizes aging well. Can you explain the concept of cognitive reserve and how lifestyle choices act as protective factors?
Yeah, so one of the things that has been shown to kind of help out in the long term. So it's not only something that we can attend to later in life, but it's actually something, if you really think about it, cognitive reserve we build over a lifetime. So now the topic of brain health is coming up a lot. So, you know, if you think of your grandchildren, your children, yourself, at any stage in your life, you can actually take a look at this and implement some of those supportive factors in your life. And one area is early on is education. So if you have a lifetime of being involved in education, whatever that means for you, traditional knowledge, if it means going to school, receiving continued education, learning a language, new language, all those kind of things count. And then curiosity and social engagement. So all of those components build a cognitive reserve. And what it means is that we have a well-connected brain. And so when there are starting to be areas that are maybe losing some of the tissue, that we have enough, it's almost like a traffic jam or like a construction area, that we can find a reroute and actually use other connections to then still be able to continue with our goals or our plans that we have and our activities. So it's actually quite fascinating how these overall connections continue to serve us well over a lifespan. But that's something to start early with.
Starting early with the education. In that instance, Yasmin, I know that you've done a tremendous amount of work on the senior snapshot. Would you be able to share a little bit about what that is?
Absolutely. That's kind of our bread and butter. That's a big piece of what we do at the commission. So every year we publish an annual data report that is a pretty broad overview of a number of different indicators tracking how seniors are doing in Alaska. So included in that this year for the 2025 snapshot, I worked on expanding it to include as much, you know, information as I could find. And thank you for all of the organizations, folks that contributed data to making it possible. That's available on our website. There are some really interesting things in there this year. And we did add specifically senior suicide data, for example, and there is some mental health data in there. And it is particularly Caucasian males that are at highest risk of senior suicide. That is our highest population, and firearms account for the majority.
Thank you, Yasmin. We'll talk more about that. We are heading into our first break. We have been speaking with our guest, Yasmin Radbod, Program Coordinator for the Commission on Aging, and Dr. Steffi Kim, Researcher and Professor at University of Alaska Anchorage. We've discussed some protective factors and what it means to age well. When we return, we'll continue the conversation and dive a little bit deeper into understanding aging and dementia, separating the myths from the facts, and exploring positive approaches to navigating dementia. Stay with us. You are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. All right. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Monique Andrews. If you're just joining us, we are devoting today's program to a critical public health conversation, aging and aging well. Before the break, we noted September Suicide Prevention Month and established aging well as a significant protective factor against suicide for older adults. We were also hearing from Yasmin Radbod, the program coordinator for the Alaska Commission on Aging, about the senior snapshot. Yasmin.
Thank you. Yeah, one really interesting data point that we were able to include this year, thanks to the Institute for Social and Economic Research at UAA, they estimate in 2023 that older Alaskans age 60 and older contributed $6.7 billion to our state economy. So that's pretty amazing. And, you know, I really appreciate we had a commissioner actually who asked this question of, hey, could we figure out, you know, how much are seniors contributing? Because that would be really great to show to legislators, right? To show, hey, here's another reason why we need to pay attention to this population that is growing. And yeah, we were, thanks to ICER, we were able to find that information. So like if there are callers, if you peruse the senior snapshot and you're like, why don't they have this data or this would be really nice to use? I love that kind of feedback so I can go hunt that down.
Thank you, Yasmin. In your work across the state, what do you find is the most common early warning signs of cognitive decline that adult children or their spouses report noticing first?
Sure. I would say definitely self-neglect. And that's, you know, a category that Adult Protective Services uses. That is the number one like call in that APS gets. So when you if you start seeing your loved one or your neighbor, you know, more disheveled than usual, or, you know, they're not behaving as they typically would. If your loved one starts forgetting something that they always knew, their favorite recipe, their favorite story that they've told you, you know, since you were very small, and or they can't remember your name all of a sudden. And then also, you know, financial exploitation or, you know, as we age, we do become, we put fewer barriers up. We do become more susceptible to scams and exploitation. But being flagged, like our bank accounts, right, or noticing, you know, something may be amiss here, that that certainly happens.
Thank you very much. Dr. Steffi, when we think of your research, you've done quite a bit of research on specifically for Alaska Native elders, both in urban settings and in Northwest Alaska. What are the key protective factors you've discovered that help people age in a good way, regardless of where they live?
Yeah, before I answer your question, I might like to add
absolutely
to Yasmin what you mentioned. All of that is true. And as well, you know, if you recognize your loved one suddenly not being able to remember dates or recognize seasons is another one. So generally, if you look it up on Alzheimer's Association or so, usually if you look for early warning signs, there are usually 10 of those. And so if one another one is issues, new issues with reading or word finding or just in general, like remembering or just tasks that they always used to do or trouble planning things out. So those are all those early warning signs. Not so much the one, oh, I lost my key. Do I need to worry about this? I hear this all the time. No, it's not. We all have, you know, our struggles with that, I'm sure.
Yes.
So those are more pronounced challenges and that really impact our daily life of functioning. And so those are something to look out for. For Alaska, or for successful aging, specifically to Alaska and Alaska Native communities, there's something that stood out to us as a team was the difference between a Western society and the kind of you know, somewhat negative connotations towards aging, and then within Alaska Native communities, kind of a what I almost consider like a safety net kind of situation where there is a specific role or you know. Communities also say like an eldership kind of element to the community. And once an older adult moves into that realm, it's not just the older adult like having to seek that. It is actually one elder shared with me. It was a young one, and she saw her gray hair coming in. She's like, you know, have you started your elder work yet? It looks like you're there. And so it was something that is a specific role that people move into.
Thank you. We have a caller, Larry from Georgia, and he has a question about signs of dementia. Larry, are you there?
I am here. Thank you for taking my call. So let me tell you about myself. I'm 78 years young. I don't have dementia, but I just wonder, is it, you know, as you get older, is it natural to lose some of your cognitive functions or abilities? And number two, are there any, you know, signs of dementia? I mean, can you test for dementia?
Dr. Steffi, would you like to ask that?
Yes, I can take that. So yes, there are some changes that happen just with our physical health. Our brain also changes over time. And one thing is to maybe keep in mind, like, how much does it impair your daily functioning, right? If it's something you can problem solve and maybe adapt, and that's one of the major components, adapting to what is maybe new and maybe coming up with some strategies to work through that can be helpful. But also, if you're really worried about it, checking in with your primary care physician or with other resources, local resources that offer free screenings. There are several kind of screeners that you can take and just get an idea where you're at. It's also a fantastic idea to kind of see if it changes over time. So basically tracking it. And then if there are any concerns about your memory, usually there would be a referral process in getting more testing done to see if you really need to move forward with something else.
Thank you so much, Larry, for that call. We have another caller on the line, Judy, and she has a question about parental alienation. Judy, are you there?
Yes.
Hello? Yes, go ahead, ask your question.
Yeah. I know it's not really on point, but I want to age well, I really do, but I'm suffering from the parental alienation from my two middle-aged daughters, which affects my, that I can't see the grandkids. So they're just horrible about that. And I don't know where it came from, and I don't know how to fix it because they are both very abusive when I try to talk to them. So it's the little ones who are suffering now because they knew grandma, and now grandma's gone.
Thanks so much, Judy, for that question, and I'm really sorry to hear that you're struggling with that. Couple things come to mind. One, as heart-wrenching as that is, you know, and I don't know the full details of when you stopped being able to have contact with your grandchildren. Sometimes, you know, maybe getting involved in like an AmeriCorps senior program. In the lower 48, we call it the Elder Mentor Program. I'm not sure where you're based. Otherwise, the Foster Grandparents Program, it's called. But that's an opportunity to connect to a school. You can work with any age of kids. You can, you know, pick like the classroom or what your interests are. You can eat lunch with students, or you can be one-on-one tutoring kids in the classroom. And maybe, you know, I apologize because I don't know the specifics, but getting involved with a nearby a school and with other children, maybe that will, you know, you can show to your daughters, hey, you know, I'm doing this other volunteer work and I would love to offer this to my grandchildren also. But I will say, we mentioned the senior snapshot. In Alaska, grandparents raising grandchildren is absolutely on the rise. And I think there's, you know, growing national attention on these issues. And of course, you know, if you need to contact your local authorities about, you know, child abuse or something going on, then I would urge you to do so.
Dr. Steffi.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. And one thing, so I'm also a licensed psychologist and working with older adults, I actually hear that quite often. And one thing, and I'm not sure, maybe you are seeing a therapist already, and this is not, it's more sort of problem solve and like, okay, how does this come to this point? How may I able to engage? And so there are different strategies that you could explore in those sessions and see what might be a way of reaching out and rebuilding those relationships. And I hope in the future you will be able to reconnect and get to spend time with your grandchildren.
Thank you, Judy, for your call. One of the questions that I think might help in clearing some things up is we hear the word dementia and we kind of hear it as a catchphrase for all perhaps cognitive decline or loss of memory. Dr. Steffi, would you share with us what is dementia and maybe some of the various types?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so often this question is actually quite often asked, like what is the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's disease? That's usually how it's framed. And so dementia is a general term for conditions that describe a decline in memory ability and that are severe enough to interfere with daily life. And under this umbrella are a variety of conditions referred to as neurodegenerative disorders. And there are several of them, and I'm not going to go through the whole list, but just the major ones. Alzheimer's disease is the best known one. And then we have also frontotemporal disease, Lewy body dementia, vascular dementia, and then a host of mixed dementias. So those are usually the very common ones. And so therefore, dementia kind of encompasses all of them. And then there are the specifics.
All right. Thank you so much for that. We know that isolation kind of accelerates cognitive decline. What programs, Yasmin, does the commission support to keep aging Alaskans connected?
Absolutely. And you know, our commission, and I shared our mission, we do that through advocacy, outreach, interagency cooperation, right? We don't provide direct service ourselves at the commission, but do a lot of referral and, you know, work to try and improve those systems and make sure people are aware of what's available. One of those would be, I think we may talk about it later, also the Family Caregiver Support Program. And that's an option for older adults who are caring for children or adults with disabilities, and then also for adults who are caring for older relatives. So it serves all of those populations. But it really depends because, again, Alaska is so unique based on where you are, you know, and there's a variety of reasons for this, of which services are available, right, versus what is not. And then, again, the AmeriCorps senior programs, we have two options in Alaska. They are both run through Rural CAP, a statewide nonprofit. I mentioned the Elder Mentor Program, where you mentor youth in your local community, a beautiful intergenerational program. And then Senior Companions, which is a newer program that they're running, in which seniors volunteer with other seniors. And that could include visiting, you know, your neighbor at their home, maybe helping them with some light chore work, going on an outing, things like that.
Dr. Steffi.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would like to add to this list. So there's also the Anchorage Senior Activity Center that has wonderful opportunities to get engaged. And then opportunities for lifelong learning is a great way of getting connected with folks that are also interested in continued learning, but also they have just amazing classes on all different kinds of topics. So it's worth checking out and getting connected through those opportunities. And then, I don't know, something that I usually share, it's a little bit maybe less known, it's like a meetup opportunity. So if you feel like you have a topic that you would like to engage in with others, you could be the one driving that effort and maybe putting out a call for a meetup on that app and ask others to be involved. And you kind of have a little bit of a choice of who you might speak to and who you might invite. So that's another wonderful, great way of getting connected.
Thank you so much. Dr. Kim, society often views a dementia diagnosis as the end of a meaningful life. How do we dismantle this narrative, and what unexpected psychological strengths often remain during that time?
Yeah, and it is kind of a challenging kind of that has several aspects in it, to say it that way. Of course, it's a very a diagnosis that's quite profound and changes people's lives. And at the same time, we're moving more and more towards early diagnosis. And if you have any concerns, I would suggest having it checked out early so you can involve. And I think this is where the crux is in being able to work with that diagnosis in different ways, is once you know this is what you're dealing with and your family too, in the early stages, you are able to be part of the planning. You are able to discuss how you see yourself, where you see yourself, how you would involvement, maybe even be involved in like some of those more challenging topics. When is it maybe time to take the key away, or when to stop driving, when to maybe take other measures, or maybe stay within community and family, or are there other options necessary? So, and of course, with early diagnosis, we also have a little bit more capacity to still engage in those lifestyle changes, right? And being connected in community, connected with family, maybe taking those quizzes, maybe taking another class, right? All of those things, those options are still available, and more planning. And I think Yasmin may add to part of the planning piece.
I just wanted to add another amazing advocate, C.N. Mackey, especially in the hospice and palliative care world. When, you know, counseling folks at her Aging and Disability Resource Center, she always says this expression, you can't change the destination per se, right? But you can control the journey as much as possible. So just absolutely agree with what Steffi shared, because it makes it easier not only for yourself, but your loved ones, right? That's what it's really about. That's why having a will and all those things are so important, so that when you're gone, your loved ones have a plan and they're not hit with some unexpected things.
Absolutely. We are talking about aging and aging well and what resources are available for aging Alaskans. We are headed into our final break. You are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Monique Andrews, and I've been speaking with Yasmin Radbod, the program coordinator for the Alaska Commission on Aging, and Dr. Steffi Kim, a professor at Alaska Pacific University and licensed. Oh, I'm so sorry. That's where I work. She's at University of Alaska Anchorage. Wow. Before the break, we learned the difference between Alzheimer's dementia and normal memory loss due to aging. We discussed some risk and protective factors in navigating dementia and state resources. Prior to the break, we also were having a discussion about stigma associated with aging and memory loss, cognitive decline, Alzheimer's. Would you share a little more about that?
Yeah, and I would like actually to share with some of the Alaska Native dementia caregivers that shared with me. And that was a different perspective on what happens when maybe dementia develops or some other conditions. And one of them was the idea that life happens in a life cycle, and there might be another, like a second term of, it's considered second childhood, that a family is also considering maybe having to take care of the loved one later in life, and that being almost part of like a planning process already. So one of the caregivers I talked to, she said, well, I kind of made sure I have at the end of life, we have a, or towards the kind of retirement, that we are in a place where we can have my parents with me, where we can spend the time and the effort and everything it takes to be there for them, and that it is that they're very grateful for this experience. And another caregiver shared with me that just hearing the stories over and over and then shifting a little bit, the way she engaged in it was like, well, maybe there's still something to learn from this story. And elders can still be involved in community and are involved in community sharing those stories. And so it's still a beneficial, mutually beneficial relationship where stories are being shared, elders are being heard. And the other component to that is that with this perspective on like, well, it's kind of a way of life at the end of life, there's a little bit more gracefulness and maybe working with some of the symptoms that may occur and a little bit more just in maybe not ease because there's still challenges with it, but kind of going with it, kind of going with the conditions and going along with it and supporting the elder in their way of being instead of thinking of it so much as a disease and needing to change things up through medication or so. So it's just different approaches to you know, working through the challenges with for caring with someone with dementia.
Mm-hmm. We have a caller. Ty has a question or comment about Pioneer Homes. Ty, are you there?
I am here. Thank you so much, guys. So much goes on with the elder community, and it's, a lot of it's kind of hidden. But I wanted to point out, I'm pretty familiar with the Pioneer Home System, particularly in Anchorage, and they do real good work, especially trying to keep the people engaged, you know, and active as they can. And music therapy and reminiscence therapy and all kinds of stuff, physical therapy. And I just want to put a shout out to the Pioneer Home folks. I know staffing is always a problem, but I'm just hoping there's adequate funding and appreciation of the vital role I believe they have and can play in our community.
Thank you so much, Ty. Dr. Steffi would like to comment.
Yeah, and thank you so much for pointing that out, because there are really good efforts and very a lot of people that really care for their population. And on the other hand, it's also, you know, you talked about funding. It's one of those signs that if we as a society kind of are, for the most part, in denial that this is something that's going to happen to us as well, because we're going to be the next generation looking at, you know, what are the options for us? And I think we really need to shift this conversation a little bit and be like, okay, what would we like this to look like for us? And also making sure that we advocate and have the funding in place that allows us to age in a way that we and have the supports available to us in a way that we wish for it. So thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you, Ty. I have a question in reference to family members. How do we advise families to understand and positively respond to some of the personality changes or even agitation that can accompany dementia rather than, you know, reacting perhaps in frustration? Yasmin or Dr. Steffi?
I can speak to that to some degree. It's not the main area that I work in. However, what I know is creating choices for your loved ones in a way is one area, kind of creating an environment that keeps a person safe, right? Because that kind of takes some of the stressful elements away. But then also bringing in like social engagement and maybe looking for respite for yourself so you can take care of yourself. The other component is usually when there are communication kind of shifts around a little bit, and there are wonderful resources online about how to communicate. Alzheimer's Resources has videos available. The Commission on Aging, there's a NICOA, I think, National Commission on Aging, mm-hmm. has resources available. So there are really opportunities to take a look and see, oh, how can I work with that? And being very graceful in like, okay, there are challenges in communication. What is the main challenge here? It may be temperature of the room. It may be a person is hungry. And so not so much taking it as like personal towards yourself, but actually working with the circumstances. And, you know, the other thing is oftentimes there may be challenges in perceiving reality, and it's not worth and and engaging and like, no, that's not true. Why are you saying this or that? And trying to correct the person, but rather kind of going along with the situation and seeing where that leads to and navigating it in a more in a compassionate way instead of like trying to correct, because that usually doesn't, it leads to a lot of frustration. So avoiding those kind of situations can be very helpful.
Absolutely. We have another caller, Carol, with a question or comment on Memory Cafe and other resources. Carol, yes, are you there?
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a quick pitch for two things that are available to the community at large. We started a memory cafe, which is a social respite hour for people with dementia at some level or just concerned about cognitive abilities. It's a social gathering that's intended to mitigate for the social isolation that comes with dementia and particularly for the caregivers. So it is something for people with dementia and their caregivers, although we have other people that come as well, just because we have a lot of fun. We do have a presenter and or an activity that goes on. We have puzzles, we have music, snacks, a lot of interaction with people. And it's we started in November, and it's just been very successful. We meet on the second Friday of every month at 10 o'clock, and this is held at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church in Chugiak. And also along with this, this coming Monday, the 14th of September, we're going to also be having a dementia experience immersion event, which is being done in cooperation with the Alzheimer's Resource Center. And this is a really impactful experience where the individual is geared up, I guess I would say, to try to give a hint at what it's like to deal with daily activities when dealing with dementia. It's really impactful. It's kind of difficult to explain what it's like, but it really gives a really wide-eyed look at what it might be like to tackle even small tasks or things that are asked of you when you're dealing with a memory loss. And this also happens, it's going to be held at Our Redeemer Lutheran between 2 and 7 o'clock on the 14th. It does require an appointment because it's done a one-on-one experience or sometimes in small groups. So there's no charge. It is 30 minutes of your time. And if you're interested in participating on this, it can be done by just calling the church at 688-2158 and making a quick appointment with that. Or I'm sorry, it's 2157. My went blank. 688-2157. And set up an appointment. Again, it just takes 30 minutes of your time.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Carol, I recognized your voice. It's always great to hear from you, and thank you for all your amazing advocacy. Definitely shout out to Eagle River Chugiak Senior Center and your work creating this memory cafe, and there's been so much positive buzz around it, and I hope more communities around the state follow your lead. There's a number of things I wanted to follow up on as well. So Carol referenced Alzheimer's Resource Alaska. If you visit their website, they have available now, it's called Dementia Core Competencies, and this is a free online course. Anyone can take it. It's designed for professionals, for caregivers, but it's available to everyone, and it breaks down like the dementia umbrella, the different types of dementia that Steffi was referencing. And, you know, Alzheimer's Resource Alaska, they're a statewide nonprofit, right? And then we have Alzheimer's Association. Association Alaska as well, that has a 24/7 hotline that anyone can call at any time and talk to a trained professional and get assistance right then. In addition, you know, Alzheimer's Resource Alaska, you can get a baseline memory screening, and that is really important, like Steffi mentioned, so then you can refer to that over time and track any changes or trends that you're witnessing. And on protective factors, I should mention on state programs, there is the Fresh Start program. So if you search Fresh Start Alaska, that is a free program where wherever you are based in the state, you can get connected to a coach. You come up with what your health goals are. So if you want to reduce your blood pressure, you want to lose weight, you want to quit smoking, you design, you know, how you want to check in with your coach on the phone, online. So it's really, you know, you being in charge of your health. But we know that risk factors for dementia, you know, it includes engaging your mind, continuing to engage your mind over time. Dementia can start early on in life in the brain, right? So that's why what Steffi was emphasizing, you know, early in life, we want to make sure we're not abusing substances, right? We want to protect our brain, wear a helmet, right? Reduce the risk of TBIs also. And yeah, drinking definitely, you know, abusing substances, that is a huge risk factor. Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you so much, Carol, for calling in with that wonderful information. For a listener tuning in right now who may have been recently diagnosed with early stage dementia or mild cognitive impairment, what are some of the most empowering steps that they can take to protect their quality of life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is one thing, of course, receiving that diagnosis can be a challenge. So maybe even reaching out to someone and receiving services or support, peer support, any kind of support to kind of make sense of what just happened. But then also taking a look at what are your strengths, what are your interests, how would you like to stay connected, what would that look like, and start that process right away or continue what you already have been doing. One of the things is one example that I really enjoyed hearing about was being involved in making music or social dancing. And so any kind of activity that involves another person kind of stimulates the brain, because you have to receive stimuli, you have to kind of react to them. So you engage and attune to another person. And that's one of the strongest things you can do to support your brain and continue, you know, keeping on, holding on to some of the functions. There it is.
Yasmin, did you have anything to add?
Absolutely. Thanks, Steffi. Dr. Howell at UAA runs the Healthy Aging Lab, and she's come up with some really cool, innovative programs. Kind of like Carol was referencing, you know, a memory cafe. You can bring your loved one and the caregiver, both, you know, have a good time, right? Activities. So Dr. Howell launched Improv, Dementia Improv, and that is just a really cool, right, artistic, fun activity that engages your brain. And I wanted to shout out also the International Association for Indigenous Aging, or IA Squared. They have great resources on their website, stuff to help, you know, caregivers. And they run, it's like the Indigenous version of Dementia Friends, which is a national movement, but you can get trained in a better understanding of what dementia is and like volunteer to educate your community. Alzheimer's Resource Alaska is also working closely with rural communities. They're really trying to expand their outreach. So,
excellent. Thank you so much. I want to thank the both of you, Yasmin Radbot and Dr. Steffi Kim, for talking to us today about successful aging and dementia. If you or someone you love is struggling, please call 988 or text or reach out to Alaska Careline at 1-877-266-4444. 4357. Thanks to our audio engineer, Crystal Hyde, and our producers, Emily Mesner and Rachel Cassandra. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing at line1@alaskapublic.org.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.